about that last few feet. But that's sort of an idea, is think about it, the way that that wicked towards the house, and think about how you could break it up. Stephanie, do you have anything, any thoughts on fencing that you want to add? Because I see there's another question in the chat.
I don't have anything other than we had talked before about there's some fencing that had like stones in it, which was really kind of beautiful, like kind of like wrought iron with rocks that filled it up, like river rocks or things like that. There was a fancy term, which I don't remember, so I'm maybe not very helpful, but when I think about my wood fence and my chain link, I live in Louisville and the suburbs, some alternatives that would not be, just chain link. I think about that fence that you talked about, that it's filled up with rocks and it's like a piece of art as part of your home.
Yeah, I think that's called like a gabion fence or gambion fence or something like that. I'm not remembering the name completely either, but yeah, I think they're really, really attractive. And I don't know, as far as cost goes, how they would compare. I don't know that the rock is super expensive, but I think you use quite a bit of it to fill it up. Somebody said there's a rock fence on Iris between Broadway and 28th, and that's the one I think about all the time because I drive down there quite a lot. And yeah, that was, I think, maybe the first time I saw that type of construction. And I think it's just lovely. So yeah, if you Google ignition resistant fencing, you can get all kinds of great ideas about what you can install. There's also sort of those adobe walls that people put in. There's quite a number of those in Boulder. So what's our next question here, Stephanie?
All right, let's see. Someone asks, Kate says she's going to be replacing a 30-year-old redwood deck, and what advice would we give her?
I think replacing the deck is a great idea, and there's sort of a different advice depending on what the deck is like. And so the first thing, Beth, I don't know if you want to, I mean, Kate, if you want to have a little conversation about this, but you could unmute and I wanted to ask you a question, if that's all right. So is your deck like high up in the air, or is it sort of almost like at patio level?
No, it's high up. It's on a slope, as most mountain houses are, and it's on the backside. And so probably minimum height is 10 feet from the ground.
Okay. So one thing that I think most people, well, I shouldn't assume anything, but about what people know and don't know, I think because I work a lot with construction professionals, I'm pretty well aware that the cost of materials has been skyrocketing, and that there are some of the things that used to be true, like that wood was the least expensive material to build with, are no longer 100% the case. And I see Stephanie, you're shaking your head. Do you have personal experience with that, or?
I was doing some cost comparisons between wood and things like Trex, and Trex is a brand, but there are all different kinds of composite materials that decking can be made of, and they're all different levels that are ignition resistant up to some point, and then a little less and a little less. But wood, I think it was cedar actually, was more expensive than one of the mid-grade like Trex composites, and just a tad bit less expensive than the really ignition resistant, the stuff that Abby says, if you're gonna go big, do it right. So wood is so expensive right now, it is not the most cost effective material for anything, decking.
So I think it's kind of counterintuitive because we are all used to thinking of wood being the inexpensive solution, but Stephanie is right. And she did this research. I should tell you in all honesty, she did the research back in February, March, when our county commissioners were considering whether to raise the ignition resistant materials standards for the eastern part of the county after the Marshall fire happened. But so I don't know if those numbers, I don't know, Stephanie, have you checked in on that recently, or are these sort of from 6 months or 5 months ago?
I haven't checked in on them recently, but I have talked with folks and, you know, phone calls and things that we know that the cost of materials has only gotten higher since then. Mm-hmm. And wood is in there with everything else. So I can't imagine that it would be that, you know, suddenly those wooden decks would be less expensive again.
Well, good. Sadly. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So there are composites, and those are definitely better choices for your decking surface. The county has, if you live in the western part of the county.
Yes.
Okay. So if you're going to pull a building permit.
Yes.
Okay. So the decking material will be reviewed at that point by the plans examiners. But even for anyone who's just doing a little retrofit that doesn't require a building permit, you can still find the standards that the county uses. If you Google Boulder County ignition resistant materials, you end up with a PDF, and you can search it for decking or deck and see. I can't tell you from memory the standard, because it's one of these things that says like an ASTM rating of blah, blah, blah. That's a kind of testing that they do to see how many like inches per second or something fire will spread on materials. These things are tested in laboratories, and Boulder County has determined what level we want to see materials meet. But you can always reference those standards if you're just out there shopping, or you can bring them with you. And when you go to your decking supply place, if you're buying the material yourself, and say, I want something that meets or exceeds this standard. And the basically what that standard is showing is what the plastic content is of this material. So composites are basically a combination of sawdust or some kind of wood product and plastic. And the higher the amount of plastic, the less combustible it will be. And even if it catches like heat, it will start melting rather than sending flames up. So it's definitely a safer option to use. There are other materials that people use on decks, which can include steel planks. And those are used a lot in docks. If you can kind of picture that, like if you're out on a lake and they have those floating docks and they have a steel surface, I think those have been adapted a little bit to decking as well. And the other thing I've seen recently is people using like thin concrete, layers of concrete on their deck. So those are some actual decking materials. And then the other part of the deck, of course, is the supports of the deck. And I have heard through the rumor mill that steel has become more cost competitive than it used to be. And so some of the people, especially when the decks are pretty high off the ground, I've seen people start using steel supports. So Kate, that's something you could talk to a deck contractor about, the cost comparison. The thing that is more standard, of course, is pressure treated wood, which is also way less combustible because of the chemical process that goes on when they're making the pressure treated. Oh, somebody looked up, Stephanie, thank you. She looked up the ASTM standard. I can never remember that. I'm sorry. I wish I had that brain that could hold like facts and figures like that in there all the time, but that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't have it. No. Just copied and pasted.
Well, thank you for doing that.
Sure.
So Kate, does that sort of answer your question about decks?
Well, I'm curious about how important it is from a fire perspective, a home hardening perspective, to use the steel framing that is considerably more expensive still. I would agree, the decking material itself, the bids that I've been getting, it seems clear that going with a composite makes sense. And I think AZEK, which is made by TimberTech, is the one I've been told is the only truly Class A ignition resistant decking material. And it's not hugely more expensive than anything else. So that seems smart.
Great. And
they offer several different lines, as all the contractors do, or the manufacturers. But I was curious about flashing systems and about the underpinnings of the deck. You know, it's all about the embers game. So how, you know, if we're hardening the home and I'm thinking about doing a new deck, how important are those various things and what are the trade-offs?
So I'll tell you right now, I'm not a plans examiner. So this is not, I can't be 100% authoritative on the nitty gritty of this, but what I would say is, if it is passing the Boulder County plans review, it is going to be ignition resistant.
Okay.
I mean, so if you think about log homes, for instance, those are considered ignition resistant just because the girth of the log itself gives it a higher rating in terms of like how much heat and how much exposure and how much time it would take for something of that caliber to catch fire. And that's sort of the same thing, I think, with those deck supports is, I mean, of course, we all know that wood will burn in a way that steel will not. But if you don't want the deck to be the cause of the ignition of the house, I think that the feeling is that will not be the case. Like something else would have to catch fire and create enough heat that would actually manage to engulf those support beams. So if it were me, I would say if you think that can save you money, then go for it. The other piece that we talk to people about when they're retrofitting their decks, and that I think could be important to kind of keep in mind, is just if you're kind of thinking about the vector of how fire might start burning your deck, often it will either come from embers showering onto the deck, which you're going to eliminate by putting on high quality ignition resistant decking boards, or it'll start actually climbing up the legs, the supports of the deck. And so you can protect the base of those wooden supports by adding some kind of a non-combustible material at the bottom, the way you would do that at the base of walls of your wood house. So you could put a little stucco or stone feature down there. You could have those supports bedded on a concrete pylon or something. It sort of depends on the design and also just the aesthetic of your home. But I think keeping fire from licking at the base of those supports would be a smart move to think about when you're designing the deck project. And Mary Beth said something very similar. You may have even said it before I did. I didn't, I just saw it. She said that she wrapped her deck posts in sheet metal from the ground level up to about 3 feet. And I think that's exactly satisfactory. So the combination of wrapping it like that and then keeping vegetation away from the base of those deck supports is absolutely what we are hoping people would do when they retrofit. Stephanie, do you have any other ideas or thoughts?
I could just I guess, reiterate that I have talked to people lately who were talking about steel decking, and I had never thought of it as an option, but more than one person that I've spoken with lately have talked about using that as their material because it was more cost effective than some other things right now.
Yeah, it's kind of counterintuitive. I don't think I'm used to thinking of steel. And I see a few more questions, but I just wanted to say one other thing sort of quickly about decks, which is not apropos of Kate's situation, but for anybody who has a deck more or less at grade, like a hot tub deck that came right off the house or a front porch or something like that, that needs to be redone. A really good ignition resistant solution is get rid of the wood altogether, pour a concrete slab. You can have it colored, you can have it textured, and it's kind of a one and done. I mean, it may cost more at the beginning, but there's not going to be any maintenance and it's not going to be a fire hazard. So that is that question. And then, I don't know, what's our next question, Stephanie, in the chat?
Sure. So Mike asks if we've seen any homes that modified the exterior with brick, stone, or stucco.
I not only have seen, I actually did stucco my own house a bit. And it was a project, but I will say this, it came out looking pretty good. And if I had one word to say to any DIY person that was like the mantra of my DIY existence, it is YouTube, because you can find out anything you need to know and you can watch people do it. And it amazes me that people take the time and effort to like film themselves and talk through their process, but there are so many DIYers out there or professionals who are willing to share their tips and tricks. So I think that the modifying the bottom, like, you know, we say the minimum standard for us is 6 inches, but honestly, the higher you go, the better off you probably will be when it comes to resiliency. So when you think about sort of that wainscoting look on homes, you know, the bottom 2 or 3 feet, I think that's a great idea for somebody who doesn't want to replace their entire house siding, but just wants to do something to kind of freshen it up. So I don't know. What do you think, Stephanie? Are you going to do that on your house?
I'm paying for new windows right now. I bet everyone knows that those are not inexpensive. But I do like the look of, we have a picture on our website. I love with the guy putting the corrugated, I think it's corrugated metal, on the bottom, like 2 to 3 feet, as his dog watches on, you know, being the supervisor. And I like the look of it. And I've seen that metal in all different kind of colors and aged look. And sometimes it blends in perfectly with the house and you can't even tell that that's what's there. And it seems like a much more cost-effective way of kind of keeping costs down and making the home safer. So perhaps after the windows go in the suburban Louisville home, we will try something like that.
No, good. Well, we'll have to take a video of you doing it yourself on residing your house.
With the dog as the supervisor. I got that.
Oh yeah, that's the important part for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it can be done really successfully. And you know, I don't have any advice about finding a professional, but that's also never a bad idea. And one thought about that is, if you like, when I did my stucco, I went down to this place called Rio Grande in Denver, which is a stucco supply place. And I assume that if you're looking for somebody to do that kind of work, like going to a place that sells the materials and seeing if there are business cards around or just talking to somebody there could be a way of coming up with a contractor who might be interested in doing that kind of work. Bricklaying, I can say very honestly, I've never even thought about trying to do that. That seems a little bit challenging, but I have done stonework and I have done done stucco. So I'm like, if I can do it, you can do it, more or less. All right. I think we have another question from Doug.
Yeah, it looks like Doug is on the chat only. So if you want to, we'll kind of address the question. What advice do you have regarding types of garage doors, like wood or fiberglass? I can try to write back to Doug as you're going through it in the chat. So he can, it sounds like he's not maybe listening, but he's on the chat. So,
well, I'm not sure if that's what he meant or if he just meant that he can't unmute and talk.
Oh, okay. Terrific. And we'll try that.
We'll try that. So yeah. I don't know. Do you have any expertise in garage doors? Do you even have a garage?
I do have a garage, but I have to, part of the information I didn't share with folks before is that I've always been, except for growing up, as an adult, I've always lived in an apartment until the last 3 years where I moved into this home. So I don't really know much about home maintenance because someone took care of it for me for like 20 years of my adult life, which was awesome. So I do have a garage, but I don't do any of the work. I've never even mown a lawn because I lived in an apartment.
Gotcha. Well, as probably everyone here has come to realize, I do not live in an apartment, and I live in a house, and I've done a lot of home maintenance myself. And so here's my advice about garage doors, which is I would avoid wood, because wood is, although it's really beautiful, and we sort of started off not with our garage, but with our home front doors with wood, we quickly realized that wood warps and shrinks and cracks and does, it's sort of a high maintenance material. And, you know, one of the things that I think if you had an assessment, you probably was probably discussed with you was not wanting to have any gaps under your garage door or around your garage doors, because embers could blow in and ignite any of the contents of your garage. So we have transitioned over to the fiberglass products when it comes to doors in my house. And where we used to have like those little lines of ice under the door in the winter, those have been eliminated by going to fiberglass. So quite pleased with the product. It has good R value and also doesn't seem to warp, and they have become much more attractive than they were like back when we built our house 20 years ago. They were pretty, I don't know, a little fugly, but now they look a lot like wood. So I think that's a good option. And I think that metal is always a good option as well. That is, I guess, my advice on garage doors. So we actually had, if there's no more questions in the chat, there are.
I think there is. There's more.
Is there something else?
Oh. Yeah. After Doug, stucco or hardy board siding is my question too. So between stucco and hardy board, I guess Ben would like to know which would you say is better?
So I think they are equally ignition resistant, and the proof is in the pudding a little bit between the two of them in terms of, I think there are possible sort of vulnerabilities in each. So it's important to make sure that if you hire a contractor, or like if you're really a hero and want to install, like, your reside your entire house by yourself, that might be taking DIY a little to a Olympic level extreme, but you want to make sure the vulnerable part of any non-combustible siding material assembly is going to be at the very bottom, because behind that non-combustible material most likely is a combustible material. So if you don't have a house that has actual concrete walls on it, you normally would have like wood framing, and then outboard of that would be some sort of plywood or OSB, like a composite wood material. And then there's a vapor barrier, and then your siding goes on the outside of that. So if it's stucco, there's usually a lath, like a metal lath material that kind of holds the concrete product. And then the concrete product goes over top of that. But at the very base of that, like where it kind of hits your foundation, there can be a little gap, and I'm showing it this way, but of course it's going to be oriented like that. So where this outer piece is the stucco, and then inboard of that is going to be that exposed wood. So the important thing with either of those materials is to remember to either bring it all the way down to the ground if you can do that, or and that might not be appropriate in terms of like the breathability of the walls. So you want to definitely check with a professional about that, or to leave like at least 6 inches of the actual concrete foundation exposed, so that, again, like if embers are blowing, they can just blow up against the concrete. But what you don't want to do is leave a tiny little gap between the bottom of that stucco or hardy material and the ground the embers could like jam up into. So with that being said, I can tell you from research that I did quite a long time ago about this, that hardy board is going to be a lot more cost competitive than stucco. It just is a much easier, simpler material to install. So I think there's way less installation cost. I don't know about the actual buying the materials, but there was quite a bit of cost difference when we were looking into it. So they're effectively the same. They're both concrete products, so they should provide good protection. Anna, do you have any other thoughts about that, Stephanie?
Only when I was doing cost comparisons back in February and March, hardy board was it was about the same price, if a little less, than other materials that you could be having on the siding of your house. So it is more competitive with cost right now than I would say stucco is.
Yeah, and I mean, what surprised me about your research back then actually was the difference between the cost of the fiber cement board versus cedar. And you would think that either the cedar would be cheaper or that they would be similar, but I think it was something like a third less expensive to use the fiber cement board versus wood siding. So
yeah, it was a half to a third less expensive to use the fiber cement board than cedar. Again, wood is not our friend with our pocketbook right now.
Yeah. And I will say that, you know, we have fiber cement board siding on my house, and I have two comments about it. One is, it is very low maintenance. I mean, we have repainted it once, and that was probably done. Well, I'm thinking it was right after the Four Mile Fire, which was in 2010. So we probably repainted it in 2011. It's been 12 years, and there's no reason to repaint it at this point. So compared to wood, I mean, you know, I think that just says it all, really. The other thing is, during the Four Mile Fire, we had fire burn up to our gravel perimeter. And our house was not burned down, but when we heard about how close the fire had gotten, my husband and I were convinced that we were going to have to repaint the house and that the paint would have blistered and this and that. And we're actually so excited about it because we had hated the color we picked on the first time. And we came home and we walked around to look at the part that had been supposedly charred by the fire, and you couldn't tell that anything had happened. So, you know, this just personal testimony about the product, I was very, very impressed with it. So I don't know, Ben, if that helps you make up your mind, because in a lot of ways, of course, this is an aesthetic choice too.
Would you like to try the next question?
Sure. What's our next question?
All right. So Mary Beth asks, how about putting a metal screen on the underside of the deck to catch embers? It would have to be something that, let's see if I can get it to see the rest of it. Sorry, my tiny screen, I can't see it.
Oh, I
think it has to be something that is fire resistant. Can you see it?
No, I think she said, yeah, she said it would have to allow the rain to go through.
Oh, okay, there it goes.
So that's a great question. And I haven't actually ever seen metal screen, but what I have seen people do sometimes is put sheet metal underneath their deck, and I think they're doing that so that they can hang out in the space below that. Like if you have a deck like Kate's where you've got 10 feet over your head and you want to be outside enjoying the rainstorm or something. The unfortunate side of that I've seen is that whatever that material is that's under the deck will tend to catch whatever is falling through the spaces between the boards. So if people aren't maintaining that area, what you can see sometimes when you get there is a whole lot of pine needles accumulated in that area. And if embers are landing on the deck and then falling through onto those pine needles, that's a really bad situation compared to like all of that stuff happening 10 feet further down on the ground on your nice non-combustible surface. So I think you'd need to be thoughtful about it and maybe be willing to clean it out. But I don't know if I would recommend screening, because screening does tend to catch things versus a more smooth material. So does that pretty much answer the question, or do you have a sort of follow-up about that?
No, that's a good point that it would catch the pine needles. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, what's the next question?
Okay. Terry says, this may be a dumb question, and we all know that there is never a dumb question, Terry. Says, I have 150-year-old slats making up the back half of my log home. They need conditioning. Is there a fire-resistant stain of some sort I can use I cannot afford to replace? We've heard this question a lot.
Mm-hmm. In the
6-7 months that I've been here.
Well, what do you tell people?
So there are things that say they are fire-resistant staining, but we don't know how long they last and under what circumstances with weather like we have, extreme sun, extreme wind, extreme cold? You know, is it resistant for 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years? There's no real way to know. I don't think Kyle and Abby typically say, yes, go do it. But if it's that or nothing, I would just say, recognize we don't know how fire resistant it is or for how long. So it may need continuous kind of upkeep. We don't really know.
Yeah. And that's a great answer. And if I can just add on a little bit to that, one thing that is really good to remember, and it's a little bit counterintuitive, but it comes up, I think, a lot with some of these old, cool old cabins, is that the more sort of well-oiled the wood is, the more fire resistant it's going to be. And I think that's counterintuitive because people think, oh, I'm like oiling my wood, I'm going to make it more flammable. But actually, when it's treated, it holds more moisture inside of it. It's more able to retain the moisture. So treating your old slats is absolutely two thumbs up on that. Like Stephanie said, we really don't endorse using any products because we think that they kind of give people a false sense of security, and there is no real evidence that they can. I mean, of course, they'll perform well right after they're applied, but the longevity, it comes into question. But the most important thing, if you have that kind of situation and you don't have the money to replace it, or you don't want to because it's historic or whatever the reason is, kind of back to what we talk to people about when we're doing our assessments, pay really close attention to the bottom 6 inches of that siding and make sure you have some sort of non-combustible material covering the bottom of your building. And then beef up your defensible space and maintain it so that fire doesn't get, there's not too much intense heat close to the building. So a little bit of the science behind that is, like, radiant heat can cause ignition at a distance. And the reason that we all call zone one, like that first 30 feet out from your house, is based on scientific studies where, believe it or not, scientists would like catch a section of forest on fire on purpose. And they use this to test various materials and firefighting clothing, things like that. So they take materials like house siding and they'll set up a section at 10 feet and at 20 feet and at 30 feet and at 40 feet. And they do that with the Romex firefighting clothing and all sorts of things. And they just look and see like which ones survived and which ones ignited. And that 30 foot distance was the minimum distance at which siding would not ignite from the heat of a fire burning. So, you know, if that's what you have and you want to keep it and keep it safe, just be sort of mindful of what you're doing in that first 30 feet around your house. Did that seem to answer that question or any follow-up on that?
She says, thank you.
Okay, any, there's the question about solar panels.
Is there anything we can or should direct installers to do when installing solar panels on the roof?
Nothing that I'm aware of. Are you aware of anything, Stephanie?
No, I just had a solar lady come to my house this week to talk about it. And they talk about how they know this is what they do, and they'll explain to you what they're doing and how, and the setup. So I kind of think that if there's anything that needs to be known, it would happen in the permitting process. And that's kind of a safeguard for everyone. But otherwise, I don't think there's anything that we would have to tell them about.
Yeah, that's my sense too. And we have solar panels, and there's no maintenance as far as wildfire goes. I think the only thing that maybe with the, if somebody, not with new solar panels, but sometimes in the old style where they were sitting straight on the roof, if you notice that debris is getting trapped by the solar panels, you might need to figure out a way to clear that off periodically, like with a hose or with a long rake or utensil of some sort. But yeah, I think anything that's been installed in the last like 10 or 15 years, they've probably had to deal with thinking about wildfire for sure. So I think Terry had one other question about any other advice for the old slats. And the only other advice I have, and not having seen the old slats in person, but having been to a number of cabins recently that have, and these aren't slats, but they're sort of that half or quarter log that was very popular back in, I think, like the 40s and 50s, when a lot of these cabins up in some of our cabin communities were built, where they left the bark on the logs, and then they put, you know, they were sort of cut and then added in as siding. And my advice for people who have that would be to scrape off as much of that dry old bark as you possibly can before you refinish your building, because I think that's really going to be the most combustible element of that siding.
Can I add that what I mean by slats?
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of reverb on my end. Can you hear that? Or hang on, let me turn this off. Okay. What I mean is I have the old pine slats. So I have a log cabin, but then I have the slats on the back, and they're probably 150-year-old as well. They're not the half logs. They're like pine planks.
Okay, so they were sort of like milled back then, like.
Yeah.
And how thick are they?
Quarter inch, maybe. No, okay. They're not thick.
Yeah. So just to be aware that they probably are going to be a pretty vulnerable part of your cabin, because again, like, the wood is old, so it's dried out for 150 years, and you know, there's not a lot of moisture around here. Mm-hmm. Do you want to keep them sort of for the historical like ambiance, or is it?
Yeah, at this point, they are a designated historic structure, so I can't really do anything other than replace it with something that looks like it. Mm-hmm. And I can't afford to do that. So.
Right. So one thing that I think is important to with the, because I see this with those older materials, is a couple of things. Like within each board, you kind of end up with these little separations.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fill those areas with wood putty or something like that, so that embers can't like land inside the little grooves and get trapped in there.
Okay.
So kind of refinishing or reanimating that a little bit. And then the other thing is like the gaps between the two boards.
Oh yeah. So, and there's again, lots there. Basically what they did is pine underneath. I have no insulation. So interior is a pine board, exterior is a pine board, and they basically alternated. So yeah, there's a lot of maybe 2-inch gap, 1 or 2-inch gaps in between them.
So if you can find a way to fill those, or I don't know what it, I mean, chinking is cool, but I have never seen it used on a vertical, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wish.
And chinking's expensive too, boy. You know, we're looking at re-chinking the log cabin part, and the, oh my gosh, that's cost prohibitive as well.
Right.
So I want to do what I can, but you know, money's pretty tight.
Well, the problem, unfortunately, with like a gap that's 2 inches is it's too big for caulking. Mm-hmm. So you'd need to find a fill material, and then maybe you could caulk that in. If you know what I mean, like, I don't know if you've ever seen, and this is more something I'm familiar with from interior, but you, if you're trying to fill a large gap with caulk and the caulk isn't going to stick, they have like these pieces of foam. You can like buy it at the hardware store. Mm-hmm. Well, not exactly backer board. They're like, but it is like a backer material. And then you sort of caulk that in. So I don't know what you would use for an exterior version of that, but that's kind of the way my mind starts to think about this, is figuring out a thing that could actually fill those gaps in.
Okay.
And then I think I did a little field trip couple of years ago, I guess, with Leslie at one point to McGuckin's, and we were just looking at non-combustible versions of things like foam and caulk, and they do make those products, and they're pretty much, they call them fire resistant, not non-combustible. I shouldn't say non-combustible. That was way overreaching, but yeah, it might be worth like looking for if there is a good fire resistant exterior product that you could use, and, you know, just
on, sort of on top of the slats that are already there.
Well, or I would say for between the slats.
Oh, between them.
Those, for filling those gaps.
Okay.
And you can even use like wood as the filler material and then caulk it in. It sounds like it's going to be a bit of a slow zen kind of project where maybe you do one or two lines whenever you get a chance to. If you can hire somebody to do the whole thing, that's one thing, but mm-hmm. you could just start.
No, that's going to be a do-it-yourself project.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, it's just, I'd start sort of doing that and just nibble away at it. And
okay. From what I understand, to begin the nibbling would be to make sure there's 6 inches of non-combustible material below. Yes. And then make sure they're well oiled, and then go from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you've got that completely right. Like, or you could well oil first and then put the 6 inches. I think those two things are pretty much like the first steps. And I think they're pretty much equally important.
Okay.
And then somehow filling and tightening would be the next move.
Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
Oh, I'm glad.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, somebody said backing rod is the word that we're looking for here. So, well, I feel like we are kind of, believe it or not, at the end of our hour. Does anyone have any final question or thoughts or something, great idea for somebody who's had a question that you want to share? Because I think we are about to sign off and say thank you so much, everybody. Oh. And Stephanie, it was fun doing this with you. And thank you for stepping in. I think we had a little bit of a last minute cancellation with Brett. So
yeah.
Stephanie is stepped in on the fly, and
thanks for having me. I would just say, anybody who's left, if you have other questions, always you can call or email, and sometimes we can send pictures or have the conversation not on Zoom. We can get you in touch with the mitigation specialist if we don't know the answer in the office. So please just know that we're always here for you. You don't have to wait until Let's Talk Mitigation to ask those questions. We do love spending the time with you. now, but you can ask anytime and we'll do our best to try to get you a good answer.
Well, thanks everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much.
Bye.